While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis. Now, as Namibia navigates intensified public scrutiny over governance, economic management, and service delivery, On the Radar News Analysis continues to provide a structured platform for evidence-based national conversation. Broadcasted weekdays from 1300 hours to 1430 on Eagle FM, the program is now hosted by yourself truly, Ndafa Happy Juju, and we focus on unpacking the policies, the economic indicators, and institutional decisions shaping Namibia's development trajectory. Opening up Monday's edition this afternoon, we always available from 1300 hours. We emphasize on the importance of informed, measured debate, a time when economic choices carry heightened consequence and communities across the country are calling for tangible improvement in service delivery. Now, unlike other traditional news bulletins, On the Radar News Analysis deliberately pauses to examine how registration translates into implementation, how national budgets convert into real services, and how leadership decisions impact everyday lifestyles from Windhoek to the coast, the North and the South. Our program convenes subject matter experts, policymakers, analysts, and members of the public to ensure decisions remain balanced, solution-oriented, and grounded in verifiable facts. Now, you're encouraged to follow in on Eagle FM frequencies nationwide or stream us live via the Eagle FM website or download the Eagle FM app and participate through our WhatsApp engagement platform. Now, as Namibia enters another week of policy deliberations and economic reflection, On the Radar News Analysis continues to position itself as a reform where informed debate meets a national purpose, prioritizing clarity, accountability, and constructive engagement. Now, let's get right into today's top stories. The Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Emmatia Phyllis, is hosting a regional stakeholder engagement session in Kavango West region that is aimed at strengthening collaboration and accelerating digital development in a largely rural northern region. Now, the engagement forms part of the ministry's nationwide outreach program to familiarize regional leaders, traditional authorities, youth representatives and local businesses with the mandate of the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology, while also gathering input on connectivity challenges unique to remote communities. Now, in her address, Atiofilus is expected, she outlined ongoing ICT infrastructure projects, policy priorities, and future plans designed to close the digital divide between urban centers and underserved regions, such as the Kavango West, expanding broadband access and improving network reliability, as well as enhancing digital literacy, which remains central to the ministry's strategy. Now, speaking at the event is the governor of Kavango West, that is Verna Sinimbo. She was addressing the crowd and, of course, appreciating the presence of MICT at the region.
Kavango West is distinguished by ICT initiatives in our region and creating platforms for open dialogue with regional leaders and ICT stakeholders to collectively address challenges within this sector. This engagement is both timely and strategic. It provides us with a valuable opportunity to reflect on our regional realities, share experiences, and collaboratively identify practical solutions that will enhance connectivity, improve service delivery, empower our youth, and stimulate inclusive economic growth through technology. As articulated in our State of the Region address under the theme, Empowering Communities, Transforming Agriculture, and Creating Sustainable Employment. And guided by the developmental priorities of the SWAPO Party Manifesto, Kavango West remains firmly committed to inclusive growth, digital transformation, and people-centered development. The manifesto emphasizes on the expansion of ICT infrastructure, digital inclusion, skills development, and innovation as key drivers of socio-economic transformation. These priorities resonate strongly with our regional agenda, particularly in addressing connectivity gaps in our rural communities, promoting digital literacy, empowering youth, strengthening e-governance, and supporting entrepreneurship. Through our SORA commitments, the region continues to focus on, not limited to, expanding access to ICT services, especially in remote and underserved communities, promoting digital skills development to enhance employability, strengthening partnership with ministries, private sector, and development partners, leveraging technology to improve public service delivery and transparency, and creating an enabling environment for innovation-led economic growth. Allow me, Honorable Minister, to also express our sincere appreciation to the Minister of Information and Communication Technology for the planned establishment of a rural ICT center in Namagoro constituency. This initiative is both timely and transformative, as it will greatly enhance digital inclusion, skills development, and access to information for our rural communities. While we are grateful for this important investment in Namagoro, we respectfully request that similar rural ICT centers be rolled out across all our 7 constituencies in the region so that no community is left behind in our collective journey towards digital empowerment and inclusive development. For Kavango West Region, ICT is not merely a sector, it is a catalyst for development across agriculture, education, health, governance, small business growth. We therefore stand ready to work hand in hand with your ministry and all stakeholders to ensure that no community is left behind in Namibia's digital journey. Honorable Minister, distinguished guests, your engagement with us today reaffirms our shared responsibility to build resilient communities, unlock opportunities for our young people, and drive sustainable development through innovation and collaboration. Once again, to everybody present here, we are so grateful that you could make it to come and attend this very, very important engagement. Welcome to Kavango West Region. We trust that today's engagement will yield meaningful and lasting outcome for our region and our nation.
Kavango West, characterized by dispersed rural settlements and limited infrastructure, has faced persistent connectivity gaps. Government views improved ICT access as critical, not only for communication, but also for economic diversification, e-government services, telemedicine, online education, and youth entrepreneurship. Now, the stakeholder engagement aligns with Namibia's broader digital transformation agenda and national development frameworks, which prioritize inclusive economic growth and service delivery. Now, by engaging directly with regional stakeholders, the ministry aims to ensure that ICT investment responds to local needs and contributes to reducing inequality. Now, the session also provides an opportunity for community leaders to raise concerns in around network outrages, high data costs, cybercrime awareness, and digital skills training. As Namibia continues to modernize its digital infrastructure, the Kavango West engagement underscores government's commitment to ensuring that no region is left behind in the country's technological advancement. Let's now take a listen to the Minister of ICT, that is Emma Theophilus, speaking at the engagement in Kavango West.
Kavango West is distinguished by its rich agricultural and forestry potential. I've spent the last couple of days in the region and it was raining. My first comment to the Honorable Governor was that it's been raining and the greenery is so beautiful. And for that, the communities here in the Kavango West region, whose livelihoods can potentially be supported by innovation and access to opportunities, as one of the youngest regions in the country, Kavango West holds significant promise to contributing meaningfully to national development, particularly through the effective deployment of ICT infrastructure, which has great potential to unlock e-agricultural opportunities or agri-tech, boost productivity, efficiency, market access for local farmers, in line, of course, with our National Development Plan number 6 and its aspirations. Honorable Governor, ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of my engagement with you today is to take stock of the ICT-related challenges in Kavango West region, while also providing an update on key developmental and interventions, events or activities being carried out by the Ministry of Information and Communications Technology, as well as our line public enterprises. This platform allows us to collectively reflect on where we are, clarify where each stakeholder fits into the greater, bigger scheme of things, identify practical areas for improvement and collaboration where technology is concerned. ICT remains a critical sector for socio-economic development, as outlined in NDP 6. In line with the mandate of the Ministry of ICT, we continue to play a central role in creating an enabling environment in which the ICT sector can grow, can innovate, and deliver meaningful impact for the communities we'd like to expand broadband connectivity to. This is a collective journey that requires partnership, coordination, and a shared responsibility as we work together to shape a digitally inclusive Namibia that improves livelihoods and enhances the quality of life for all. Against this backdrop, I want to outline a few key issues that we've come to pick up while we've been in the region. In terms of network connectivity, Kavango West region is one of the less connected regions nationally, which is a major barrier to the region's development, affecting everything from education to emergency services to healthcare, and has negative impact on the potential of expanding service delivery. It is on this basis that under the Universal Service Fund, which is financially supported by the Government of the Republic of Namibia, Kavango West region has been prioritized under phase one of the project under USF to expand network connectivity. And so far under that phase, we've been able to construct 3 network towers, 2 at Kandumbu and Owiwi in the Mpungu constituency, and 1 at Naimanya in the Tondoro constituency. These 3 network towers have been completed and are awaiting to be connected to the power grid or electricity or energy by NORED. Therefore, we urge NORAD to help us expedite this process so that once connected, these towers will bring about the much needed connectivity in these constituencies in the Kavango West region. And this connection will ensure that nearby schools and health facilities will receive free Wi-Fi for the next 7 years to enable e-education and e-health. Additionally, under phase two of this project, 3 sites are earmarked for this region, one in Musese constituency and another 2 in Pungu. The ministry is committed to work with the regional leadership to identify more unconnected communities for the betterment of this region and, of course, Namibia at large as we expand this project across all 14 regions. As much as we advocate for digital connectivity, ladies and gentlemen, Namibia is becoming vulnerable to cyber attacks. The cases of cyber incidents are shockingly on the rise. This requires the government to step up efforts to tackle these sophisticated threats through established structures and legislations, regulations, awareness campaigns, and implementation of threat intelligence and detection tools. It is against this background that the government provided funding for the establishment of the Namibia Cyber Security Incidents Response Team, NAMCERT for short, under the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia. This body is fully operational and serves as the coordinating point on cybersecurity matters. Our National Cybersecurity Strategy and Awareness Raising Plan, which is being actively implemented by the Ministry of ICT, in partnership with UNICEF and Lifeline Childline Namibia, is educating citizens on the online risks and importance of protecting ourselves on digital platforms. My team and its representatives from our development partners have been in the Kavango West region for about a week now, and they've conducted online safety awareness raising campaigns at various schools and look forward to coming back to conduct even more sessions. In terms of responsive legislation, MICD has concluded our stakeholder engagements to solicit input and comments on the Cybercrime Bill, which aims to create cybercrime offences and penalties as well as general provisions to bring those to book who commit crimes in the cyber world. Namibia is improving broadband speeds that can drive digital innovation and economic growth with a reviewed national broadband policy. The new broadband internet speed targets of 25 megabits per second downloads and 3 megabits per second upload speed will be implemented on a date to be announced very soon to ensure fast speed, seamless connectivity, and boosting productivity and innovation. In terms of our Electronic Transactions Act, the regulations on the electronic signature and accreditation of security services or products have been finally finalized. The adoption of the electronic signature, which is deemed more secure, authentic, and legally binding, results in cutting operational costs relating to printing documents, scanning, and manually processing them when you sign them. So instead of getting a document, you print it, you sign it, you scan it, you upload it, and then send it to somebody, all you have to do is get an authentic and secure electronic signature, and you can easily sign documents online, which will really cut down time on productivity that we need in this country. Ladies and gentlemen, just like other countries worldwide, Namibia is prone to natural disasters of different magnitude, such as drought, floods, wildfires, and Namibia has therefore developed and we have launched our National Emergency Telecommunications Plan aimed at tackling the rising threat of natural disasters and boost disaster risk management to ensure reliable communication during crises. And I think, I'm sure we can appreciate that technology is a man-made, you know, thing. I'm sure, especially during the season, the rainy season, you will see that the network would trip because of the rain. When the electricity goes down, the likelihood of that tower connected to the grid also goes down, because technology is interdependent on so many other factors and variables, sometimes out of the Ministry of ICT's control, out of the operator's control, such as NTC and TN Mobile. And this is why sometimes we ask for your patience when disasters like that strike or when inconveniences like that pop up, because technology is man-made. Ladies and gentlemen, the Ministry is currently advancing the finalization of the community media policy, which is aimed at strengthening and enhancing community media, where especially community radio stations are vital platforms for access to information, local participation, and inclusive dialogue. On Saturday, we had a very nice program in the Murirani area, and it was such a great platform to showcase the talent that the Kavango West region has in terms of young people, many who are also on the Witani radio station. But there is that need from all the stakeholders in this room for us to work together to make sure that the Kavango West region has a community radio. Voices the communities can trust, people the community knows very well, and who they can accept, that when information is shared with them from these people, that information is authentic, it's verified, and speaks to the needs in the Kavango West region. And I know with the leadership of the Honorable Governor, the Chairperson of the Regional Council Management Committee, and all the Honorable Councillors here, we can make it possible for the Kavango West region to have its own community radio. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, access to information is a fundamental human right. Thus, our efforts to ensure unhindered dissemination of information on issues of socio-economic development, government information centers have been developed in all our 14 regions as part of the Ministry of ICT's decentralization efforts. These centers provide seamless connection to all mainstream media, such as NBC TV and radio, as well as to community media across the country. I therefore call upon the regional leadership, including community leaders, as well as heads of different offices, ministries, and agencies that exist and are stationed here in the Kavango West region, to effectively use the Kavango West Government Information Center studio at the Ministry of ICT's offices. The studio is fully fledged, all the equipment is there. If you have an important message to give out, that is the structure, infrastructure available to you as a community to send out any information that is vital to the development of this region. Please be responsive, always be available to our teams as they look out or seek out your audience for you to share on information on projects, programs, and activities that are earmarked for development in the community and the entire Kavango West region. Government is investing a lot in water projects, in expanding energy and electricity, in communications like I've outlined earlier. But these projects need to be known. People need to see where the strides are being made, and that GIC is an avenue for local leadership to share that information. Additionally, the Ngamagoro Rural ICT Center that the Honorable Governor spoke about earlier is another way the Ministry of ICT, through programs called Rural ICT Centers, is rolling out a multi-purpose community center where people can get Wi-Fi connectivity, can print a document, can access a computer to type a CV, can access a PA system. I'm happy to announce that with the support of NTC Namibia, to the value of about 200,000 Namibian dollars, the Rural ICT Center in Ngamagoro has been earmarked, and construction will start soon, with free Wi-Fi will also be available for the residents of the Ngamagoro constituency. Honorable Governor, ladies and gentlemen, as I come to the end of my speech, as a government, we want our communication strategy that we're able to launch to effectively be rolled out in the communities, so people know when there are moves being made in their region. And I would like to call upon all government communication officers in their respective offices, ministries, and agencies to fully utilize their tools at their disposal to make sure that the community knows when government is investing infrastructure in the region. I look forward to open, constructive, and solution-oriented discussions during this engagement this morning. May our deliberations be productive and result in practical outcomes that strengthen collaboration, advance ICT development in the Kabango West region, and of course, as a country as a whole. Thank you very much, Pandu.
And with that, let's pause right here and make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken Portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo Fat Cook Flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at furmanbrock.com. We care.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ulipurane ngeno wapubwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka okone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. Of course, that is Eagle FM. Now, of course, if you haven't already, ensure that you do grab today's e-paper of edition of The Villager e-paper, which is available. Now, since it's Monday, today's headline covers the following topics. The SACCO dilemma, reform or exit. World enters water bankruptcy stage. Nandindaitwa calls for enhanced continental sanitation services. Radio remains a trusted medium of communication. Fundamental shifts to fight cyber attacks, according to WEF. Why Afrimax banks break with Finch exposes a deeper rift. Get your copy and read the best economic news and more and stay informed by subscribing to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel and receive a tri-weekly dose of economic, social and community news absolutely free of charge. All you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144 and never miss an update. And now in other news. Water diplomacy and sustainable resource management featured prominently on the margins of the 39th ordinary session of the African Union AU summit, where Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah held talks with high-level delegation from the Global Water Partnership. Now, the meeting took place in Addis Ababa alongside the high-level breakfast of the Africa Water Investment Program at the AU headquarters, underscoring the growing urgency of coordinated water governance across the continent. The GWP delegation included former Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete, Honorable Pablo, and Ms. Alex Shimalambwe. The delegation convened application to Namibia for hosting the organization's global headquarters in Windhoek following its relocation from Sweden. They commended Namibia's leadership in advancing the global water agenda and highlighting the strategic importance of positioning a global water governance hub on African soil, a move viewed as strengthening Africa's voice in international water policy, climate resilience, and sustainable development financing. Now, before we take a listen to President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah speaking at the event, I want us to listen to the Master of Ceremony who was heading this engagement and how she introduced the President at the AU.
Madam President, you are one of the very few leaders who stood up and say, I want to be accounted. You are the only woman who are serving in this council. It is you who was part of those who conceived this when Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said we must invest in water. When this continent decided that this gap on water investment must be closed, you were there. And you stood up and say, you want to be counted. You want to be part of water. We're so pleased that today you'll be representing the presidents that are part of that council who are not with us due to unforeseen circumstances. But when we have you, when we have the mother in the house, what else do we want? We have everything. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to request you to give a round of applause as we stand to welcome Her Excellency Mama Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, President of the Republic of Namibia.
Meanwhile, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah has called for urgent and scaled up investment in climate resilient water infrastructure across Africa, warning that water insecurity poses a direct threat to economic growth, food systems, and regional stability. The president delivered the keynote address at the International High Level Leaders Session on Water Investment, held on the 15th of February 2026 at the AU Resonant in Addis Ababa, on the margins of the 39th original session of the African Union Summit. Now, it was held under the theme Water for People and Prosperity through Cooperation and Investment in Water. The session convened heads of state, development partners, financial institutions, and water governance experts to examine how Africa can strengthen readiness for large-scale climate-smart water projects. In her address, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah emphasized that water is not only a social good, but a strategic economic asset. She noted that erratic rainfall patterns, prolonged droughts and floods driven by climate change are increasingly undermining agricultural productivity, energy generation, and public health systems across the continent. She stressed that accelerating project preparation, improving governance frameworks, and mobilizing blended financing are essential to to unlock investments in dams, desalination plants, irrigation systems, and transboundary water management initiatives. And I quote, Africa must move from commitments to implementation, she said, urging stronger cooperation between governments, between regional bodies, and international financiers. Now, the high-level session forms part of broader continental effort to address Africa's significant water infrastructure deficit. Let's take a listen to President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah as she delivered her speech at the AU Water Investment Summit.
This water summit is convened at the right time under the theme of the year, which is ensuring sustainable water availability and safe sanitation system to achieve the goals of Agenda 2063. And some of us, when we talk about Agenda 2063, we know how much efforts we have put in the corridor of this building when we were developing this roadmap of the African continent. And it's something that we don't want to fail. And we want each and everyone in your sector, whatever you are doing, your focus should be to realize the goals of Agenda 2063. For many years, we have taken water availability as a natural or a normal phenomenon. Most African countries, especially those with perennial rivers, took it for granted that access to water was as easy as walking to the river and fetch the water. As such, the decision of allocating adequate funds into water, proper water infrastructure, was not considered as a top priority. Today, most countries, including Namibia, realize that water availability, security, and access are central to economic growth and the development of our respective nations. More so, the experience of the climate change, which opened our eyes to actually observe how what we can consider a permanent source of water was drying up. And this is even more true in a country like Namibia, which is known internationally, and rightly so, as one of the driest countries in the world. This impact calls for action. At this time, we can say we are late, but there is a say, late is better than never. Now that we realize the importance of water, and it is negatively impacted by the climate change, this is the time for us to come together and agree on the way forward to see ourselves, water is life. Therefore, our gathering here today must re-energize our efforts to work towards improving access to clean water and sanitation. Namibia was honored by co-chaired in 2023 the AU Africa Water Investment Program International High-Level Panel on Water Investment for Africa, which supported the AU in publishing two documents, namely Africa is Raising Investment Tide and Africa Water Investment Action. And I believe as African and the world at large will make use of these two documents as we are charting our way to saving water. Those two important documents provide guidelines for AU member states, their development partners, and the private sector on how to mobilize the required additional $30 billion per year towards climate resilience, water and sustainable sanitation in Africa by 2030, 4 years from now. Therefore, commitment should be made and resources should be mobilized with the aim of closing the water investment gap to ensure the effective implementation of the Africa Water Investment Program High-Level Panel Investment Action Plan under the UN 2023 Water Action Agenda.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 2 kilogram real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only 99.99 Namibian dollars. 3 kilos Polana pasta, just 74.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of Romy 37% fat spread, just 14.99 Namibian dollars. 700 milliliter crystal gold tomato sauce, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. USave, where good food costs less.
23 Water Action Agenda in Africa. We should also note that water scarcity and sanitation pressure can lead to migration and displacement, which could trigger internal and close border conflicts. In Namibia, we are already seeing communities fighting over grazing, and that is because we are not getting enough water, and the grazing becomes a problem in some parts of the country. In order to avoid such conflict from happening, targeted and result-driven investment should be made in order to ensure sustainable water resources. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, sanitation ensures dignity, good health and better life. The continent still lacks basic sanitation in many communities, a situation that was too long neglected. Now that we have identified it is a priority, investment in sanitation program and project are highly recommended. Let us endeavor to save our communities in order to enhance sanitation services that are crucial to dignity, public health, and well-being. As guided by the Sustainable Development Goal 6, which focus on ensuring availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all, Namibia adopted the National Water Supply and Sanitation Policy, which focus on sustainable access to safe water, improved sanitation and hygiene through integrated planning, community participation, and national targets for 2030. The policy also emphasized environmental sustainability and efficient utilization of water resources. These are the types of policies that African countries and development partners should invest in and seeking funding for. It is my hope that our commitments and renewed drive for action will be able to raise the required funds to ensure that Africa's water security and availability and sanitation for all are achieved. Namibia, on her part, she will do her best to make a contribution to the programs of water management. We were honored by the board of the Global Water Management Project that has decided to host their headquarters or secretariat in Windhoek. And we believe through that secretariat, together as the Southern Africa and Africa as a continent, will make the best out of this program to serve the African people better in order to take our people out of poverty and make them to be self-reliant. I thank you for your kind attention.
The high-level session forms part of a broader continental efforts to address Africa's significant water infrastructure deficit. Now, experts estimate that billions of dollars are required annually to meet growing demand for safe water, for sanitation and climate adaptation measures. Leaders at the forum highlighted the need to strengthen institutional capacity so countries can develop bankable projects capable of attracting private and multilateral financing, now enhancing technical readiness, regulatory certainty, and cross-border collaboration were identified as key pillars of sustainable water investment. The event aligns with the central theme of the 39th AU Summit, which places sustainable water availability and sanitation at the forefront of Africa's development agenda. The summit is taking place against a backdrop of intensifying climate risks and rising population pressures. Now, for Namibia, one of the driest countries in sub-Saharan Africa, water resilience remains a national priority. The president's participation underscores the country's broader commitment to regional cooperation and to prioritizing or positioning Africa as a proactive leader in global climate and water governance discussions. Now, as delegations continue, have actually ended now in Addis Ababa because President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah is expected to arrive, probably has arrived now already, at the Hosea Kutako International Airport. The message from African leaders is clear. Strengthening water security through cooperation and investment is fundamental to achieving prosperity, sustainability, and sustainable development across the continent. And that's what we had for you right here on the Reading News Analysis. Do call in to air your opinions, contributions, ask questions, and engage with us on 083-288-401. I repeat that, 083-288-401. That's the number in studio. Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with economic indicators and thereafter news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana kunongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ngeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka okwene ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora izatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back to Economic Indicators. Now, $1 today is equals to 16.04 Namibian dollars. £1 sterling is equals to 21.89 Namibian dollars. One Australian dollar is equals to 11.36 Namibian dollars. €1 is equals to 19.03 Namibian dollars. And one United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4.37 Namibian dollars. One Swiss franc is equals to 20.83 Namibian dollars. And one Botswana pula is equals to $1.22. Now moving over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. We always start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, some international news coming your way. Now let's start off in South Africa. Stats South Africa is set to release unemployment figures tomorrow. Ahead of that, let's listen to the discussion.
We want to see that that job creation of around 250,000 has stuck and that there's ongoing job creation. We're watching the construction sector. There was positive momentum there. Hope to see that continue. Signs maybe that government is building out their infrastructure rollout is gaining traction. We'd like to see this stemming of the losses in the manufacturing sector. As the rand strengthens, it makes it cheaper to import. So we don't want to see that sector coming under too much pressure. And then we'd like to see that momentum in the hospitality and retail, you know, on the back of good tourism, add some further jobs. So around 31.7, 31.8 would be a nice little positive surprise.
Right, for more on the unemployment numbers due tomorrow and in inflation data that will be released on Wednesday, I'm joined in studio to expand the conversation with SABC News economics editor Tepo Mwai. A very good afternoon to you, Tepo. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
When Stats SA released its quarterly labor force survey in 2025, South Africans were once again confronted with news that the nation's already dire unemployment rate had escalated. What can we expect this time around?
Well, I think most economists surveyed, they expect more or less the same numbers, around 32% in terms of the country's unemployment rate. But I think what's key is the movement and the shift in terms of what is the trend that is emerging from these high unemployment numbers that we are sitting on as a country. Are they so-called green shoots, as they say, in certain specific area? But I think we might find that it's a tale of two, given that it's towards the end of the year. There are certain sectors that naturally you would expect that they would do well, like your tourism and hospitality. Mm-hmm. But we know that around that time, obviously, there are a lot of factories and manufacturers that close temporarily for, you know, festive seasons. Yeah. So you might see that there are certain sectors that perhaps, you know, because there hasn't been much doing, much activity, you're not getting much from those particular sector. But the export-driven sectors, mm-hmm. Like your mining, we've seen the rally in the gold price. So you do expect that those sectors would have done exceptionally well, benefiting from a very high commodity prices. So that could actually be an impetus that we will get. But the structural issues remain at play largely. Although I think economists will look out for some signs, if indeed, you know, the areas where there's been some improvement, are those improvements translating into economic activity and by how far, how big the quantum of that would be quite significant to watch. But obviously there will be issues around youth unemployment that is still a bugbear, that is a major concerns. There are a lot of, you know, intentions and plans in the pipeline from government to deal with that. I don't think for now there will be a significant shift in addressing that. We still have quite a high number of youth that do not have quite skills that are needed in this current age, and that might actually result in many young people still outside the labor market, mm-hmm. discouraged job seekers, and youth who are neither in education or employment.
Yeah. In fact, as you speak and ventilate those issues, speaking about intentions from government and the areas of improvement, which are areas that we continue to watch as more and more people continually enter the job market, the numbers have been showing that government and businesses need to do more to bridge that gap. They need to start thinking out of the box to ensure that there are enough jobs for the people who enter the market.
Yeah, in fact, there are jobs that are available. Yeah. There are a lot of vacancies in the economy. But the problem is there aren't enough people or skills to take up those jobs. So that is one of the major issues. And there aren't many who actually can be trained for that because they don't have the most minimum to be considered for those jobs. So there is a disjuncture, disconnect between what the education system is producing and what the economy needs. And with artificial intelligence, of course, you are actually seeing that gap widening. So more and more young people need to be trained in those specific skills in order to be active.
If we see the well-documented shortages in sectors like nursing and teaching, which brings us to your point. Now, we also know that on Wednesday, Stats SA is going to release the country's January 2026 inflation data. And one of the product categories that many will be looking out for as we look at the growing concerns about the impact of the foot and mouth disease and the issues around vaccines and quarantining and so forth. That in itself is going to be a big focal point, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think going forward, that is a major concern. But currently, I don't know if there's anyone who would complain about some of the benefits of low inflation that we are seeing currently.
Yeah.
If you are using a car, you can tell the difference that if you put 200 rand in your vehicle, you put 500 rand, it actually takes you an extra mileage. And you can feel it when the trips that you would have to pay more, but now it costs much less and you've got a bit of a change. So that's the current benefits. We've seen that in the beginning of the year, in January, there was a massive cut in fuel price. And that has actually helped in keeping inflation at the current levels of around 3.6%. But there's a warning, as you correctly pointed out, that there are risks to the inflation outlook. And they can come through different ways, and one is the impact of the foot and mouth disease, and that could actually create challenges for the agricultural sector in terms of how they operate, and as a result we might see higher prices of beef. Of course, red meat has actually been a major challenge in terms of the food prices. It still continue to increase a double-digit increase, around 12%. And that is not even slowing down. Well, there are signs that it's slowing down, but it's still a double-digit increase. So that's where some of the risk could come from. The guys who produce pork, the farmers who produce pork have also been raising some concerns with the African swine and the foot and mouth disease, that they are concerned that they are starting to see cases in that particular area. And that could also push up prices. And of course, the usual suspects, the rand exchange rate, although currently it's in our favor, and it can change at any time. And that could actually increase energy as well, electricity, and those administered prices tend to also push up inflation.
So it's a mixed bag.
South Africa and the foot and mouth disease, a vaccine reduction for risk mitigation is well in progress.
A proactive livestock vaccination program is underway at the Visentekraal area in Cape Town to prevent the spread of FMD in the Western Cape.
In a 3-kilometer radius right here, we have big dairy farmers, and we cannot lose any of those animals and the industry, because that is a very important subsector of the Western Cape. So we're working very closely with Agri Western Cape, the Red Meat Producers Organizations, the MPO, which is the milk producing organization, but it's also important that you work very closely with the private vets, which we are doing. And so I get excellent cooperation with the local farmers, because they have also confidence in the Western Cape government and in our veterinary services and the local vet.
Several areas in the province have been showing positive cases of the disease. These include farms in the Mbekweni area in Paarl, Makhaza in Khayelitsha, and Mfuleni, with the latest being Klapmuts. Authorities say about 500,000 vaccines are needed in the province to prevent the spread of the disease.
It's one of the reasons why we decided to start with Visandkraal, where we are now, is that it is literally within 3 kilometers of many dairy, beef, and so we decided let's protecting here, the vaccinated ones are protected as we vaccinate, then we're also protecting the spread of the virus in case it will come here. And we know, due to the nature of movement of animals and the trade, the chances are in the communal setup is just a matter of time.
The Western Cape employs about 15,000 people in the 13.5 billion rand livestock sector. And the risk is huge.
To do risk mitigation, we've had a couple of outbreaks. We've zoomed in and dealt with those outbreaks. But today what we're doing is we're actually vaccinating this herd. This herd in Visandkraal is a free-roaming herd. And of course, this, if they were infected, they could be the carrier. We've got a lot of other dairies in the region. We need to protect those dairies. So that's why we proactively. There's been no sign of any infection on any of these cows that vets are checking. But at the same time as we're vaccinating them, we're taking blood to make sure to run those tests. Because if we pick it up, we come in and we quarantine.
Authorities say the impact could be severe and devastating to the economy if the situation goes unchecked.
We have undertaken to vaccinate the entire national herd proactively. So not waiting to see symptoms of FMD, but proactively vaccinating. And our goal is by the end of this year to have 80% of the national herd vaccinated and to reduce the incidence of FMD by 70%.
Vaccinations have also been undertaken in George and Mossel Bay in the Southern Cape, where positive cases have been confirmed. Mlamli Maneli, SABC News, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, South Africa reflects on 32 years of democracy. It's talking about the church and its role in shaping society.
For decades, the church has played a central role in South Africa's social and political landscape, providing spiritual guidance, moral leadership, and community support. During the struggle against apartheid, religious leaders stood at the forefront of resistance, helping to mobilize communities and shape the country's democratic transition. Today, however, churches are grappling with shifting societal expectations, declining public trust in institutions, and increasing call for accountability. Pastor Joshua McCauley of Rhema Bible Church says the church once occupied a central role in shaping national values, a position he believes has weakened over time.
The church was seen as a very valuable voice, a very valuable moral compass, a unifier of the people. And the church was almost central in a way to paving the way for a peaceful election and a peaceful transition of power from the apartheid government into our new democratic South Africa. And President Mandela was very active with, you know, Bishop Desmond Tutu, many other religious leaders, my father was one of them, in taking the different Christian and religious movements and joining in unity behind one goal, which was a better South Africa, where we saw racism end and we saw a future be born. Unfortunately, over the last, you could say, few decades, we've seen less engagement between the church and government, whereby government is establishing its policies, government is driving its agenda, but the church is not really consulted, the church is not engaged, you know, we are seen just as regular citizens.
As debates intensify around regulation, accountability and ethical conduct, the CLL Rights Commission insists that safeguarding religious freedom remains paramount while ensuring congregants are protected. Deputy Chairperson of the CLL Rights Commission, George Mahlango, says church must remain safe spaces for communities while operating within constitutional boundaries.
The freedom of religion is sacrosanct and it is protected in the Constitution. Our role is to promote and protect those that are in the religious sector and to ensure that the congregants are in a safe space. We consider churches to be a sacred space because that's where our communities would run to whenever they are faced with adversities. They would go to churches and seek counsel from the religious leaders. So our view is that as the CRL, we need to ensure that churches practice what is morally right, what is in the scriptures, but most importantly that they don't contravene any other constitutional imperative.
As South Africa reflects on more than three decades of democracy, the evolving relationship between church, state and society continue to raise critical questions about responsibility and accountability in a rapidly changing nation. For SABC News, I'm Luyanda Tang in Johannesburg.
Now, still on the 39th AU Summit in Addis Ababa, which focused on water security and regional stability.
Daniel Arap Moi is in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, and joins us for the latest on the African Union gathering. Daniel, thank you for joining us. What more can you tell us about the opening of the Heads of State AU Summit there?
Well, Maya, we started off this morning with quite a number of speeches that were given by several leaders here in Addis Ababa during the opening session of the Heads of State and Government Summit. And we started off by an address by the chairperson of the African Union Commission, who spoke about the need for Africa to come together if we as a continent are to develop. And he spoke about the question of unconstitutional change of government, the conflicts that are raging across different parts of Africa, which he basically mentioned that these are elements that are pulling Africa back. He says that that Africa as a continent needs to address the question of insecurity in the various pockets of the continent if we are to push forward. He also spoke about the need for African countries or Africa as a continent to harness its resources for development, that Africa has got a lot of resources that needs to be harnessed if the continent is to compete with other continents of the world. So he says these are very important issues, but his main challenge is the question of issues that affect Africa's growth towards economic development, Maya. And he was shortly followed by the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who spoke about the importance of guarding our natural resource, which is water. He says we have vast resources of rivers and lakes across this continent. But one key issue that he spoke about this resource is that it is important for African countries to use this resource for economic development, that together as one, to use water as a source of economic development and security for the continent. But Maya, most importantly, is issues that were raised by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres here in Addis Ababa. One thing that he spoke about vividly to the leaders here is that Africa must have a seat at the table of the United Nations Security Council. He says this is no longer 1946, that this is 2026. So Africa deserves a seat at the table, and this, he says, must be done. So these are issues that are still under discussion, Maya.
Right, and Daniel, you've touched on some of them there, but what key issues are likely to dominate discussions, and what do you expect out of the first day of the summit?
Yes, Maya, picking from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, the question of reforms of the Security Council. This is an issue that is being pushed here in Addis Ababa. The leaders are trying to make sure that Africa gets a seat at the table. We are saying a continent of 1.4 billion people cannot be left out in the decisions that are made. And many are saying that all the issues that the United Nations discusses, almost 80% of the projects that are run by the United Nations are based in the continent of Africa. And they are saying that there is no way that a continent this large, this big, with a population of 1.4 billion people can be left out on decision-making process of the world. So they are discussing this this afternoon through the evening. And I'm told by some sources here that the question of the reforms is very sticky in this discussion. Also, the question of the issue of Sudan, the crisis in Sudan is also holding the leaders on a sit down. They're trying to discuss how to resolve these issues. And of course, they are, the leaders are also expected to discuss the question of funding the African Union Support Mission and Stabilization Mission, rather, in Somalia. Guterres did mention here that he's very disappointed with the United Nations Security Council for not reaching a consensus on how to finance this mission in Somalia. And he did question the leaders here that if the mission in Somalia wasn't important, then what is important? This is what came out from this meeting this morning, Maya.
Meanwhile, Zambia closes borders in order... Zambia closes border to South African livestock amid FMD outbreak.
Zambia slammed its border shut to South African cattle in a rapid biosecurity move amid an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. The Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock announced the immediate suspension of all livestock import permits from South Africa. The ban extends to cloven-hoofed animals, livestock feeds, trophies, skins, hides, and even dairy products. This comes after President Cyril Ramaphosa declared the foot and mouth crisis a national disaster last week, admitting it is among the worst outbreaks the country has experienced. The disease has now spread to seven provinces. Meanwhile, the beef industry is reeling. Exports fell 26% in 2025, with shipments to China dropping 69% following a ban in May. Zambian authorities say this precautionary measure will be reviewed depending on how the outbreak situation evolves in South Africa.
Zambia's manufacturing sector has recorded its highest contribution to the economy.
Zambia has set another record. In 2025, manufacturing contributed between 9.4 and 9.5% of gross domestic product, GDP, the highest level recorded since consistent measurement began in 1990. Now, the record came immediately after one of the most severe droughts in Zambia's history, a period marked by prolonged power shortages and pressure in businesses. The confirmation did not just come from political messaging, not at all. It came from the sector itself.
We have achieved 9.4%, 9.5% GDP contribution as a manufacturing sector. This is the first time since 1990, since records existed, and it's a great, remarkable achievement, and we should not undermine this achievement. Honorable Minister, part of this achievement is the drive your ministry, the Ministry of Commerce, has given to allow our manufacturers import inputs that are not available locally using SI110.
Speaking at the 2021-2025 Economic Performance and 2026 Budget Outlook Town Hall meeting held at the Mulungushi International Conference Center right here, the president of the Association of Manufacturers, Muhammad Umar, described the outcome as a turning point for the industry. This performance reflects more than resilience. It reflects decisions. From the outset, President Hakainde Hichilema chose not to govern the economy from a distance. He consistently sat down with the Zambia has set another record. Arriving on time, rules being predictable, and markets being fair. Remember, in September 2025, President Hakainde Hichilema sat down with the Zambia Association of Manufacturers, assuring industry leaders that government would not allow the energy crisis to collapse production and that the urgent measures were being taken to keep factories operating and protect jobs. What GDP means in practical terms? GDP is the total value of goods and services produced in a country. When manufacturing contributes 9.5% of GDP, it means nearly one-tenth of everything Zambia produces now comes from factories turning raw materials into finished or semi-finished products. Okay? In real life, that translates into more people employed in factories and supply chains. More locally made goods on shop shelves, more taxes revenue without raising tax rates, stronger demand for transport, energy, packaging, logistics, more exports that bring foreign exchange into the country. In other words, it is income, jobs, business activity circulating through communities. For decades, manufacturing struggled to cross the 9% mark. It hovered between 7% and 9%, held back by energy instability, high production costs, import competition, and weak coordination between policy and industry. Remember, in 2019, manufacturing stood at about 8.1% of GDP during the COVID-19 shock in 2020, and output fell sharply before beginning a slow recovery. By 2024, despite load shedding and drought, manufacturing growth accelerated, driven by food processing, metals, construction materials. In 2025, the sector pushed further to between 9.4 and 9.5%, setting a new post towards 1990 record. Other, this places Zambia among the top 10 manufacturing economies in Africa, not by size alone, but by consistency of output and investment relative to the economy. What exactly is Zambia manufacturing? The strength of the sector lies in what is being produced. Food and beverages remain the largest segment, including maize milling, sugar, edible oils, dairy, soft drinks, beer and packaged foods. These industries continued operating even under energy stress, supported by domestic demand and regional markets. Metals and engineering have expanded, particularly copper cables, wires, steel products, and construction input. Zambia is no longer exporting copper only in raw form. It is exporting processed products used across Southern Africa's power, construction and telecommunications industries. Chemicals, fertilizer, and detergents have grown, supporting agriculture and household markets. Textiles and leather have returned through renewed large-scale investment in spinning, weaving, and printing, which restored fairness to the market and protected complaint businesses. On investment, the numbers are very clear. Of the $14.7 billion realized investments over the past 4 years, $5.5 billion went into manufacturing. These are not paper commitments. They are operating factories, especially in the Lusaka South Multi-Facility Economic Zone, employing Zambians and exporting regionally. Energy remains a constraint, but the response has changed. Manufacturers themselves have invested in thermal, solar, and alternative power to keep production running. While government reforms are diversifying the national energy mix, the importance of this record is timing. It was achieved during drought, it was confirmed by industry leaders, and it reflects a style of leadership that does not avoid tough conversations with the private sector. This is what manufacturing growth looks like when policy, investment, and production are aligned. And for the first time in decades, Zambia is building that alignment from the position of measurable strength.
And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, let's take a listen to AI chatbots are set to be included in online UK safety laws.
The UK is looking to regulate artificial intelligence to protect children using internet services. The government is pledging to respond more quickly with legislation to close loopholes in existing laws. The Prime Minister says no online platform will get a free pass over the issue of children's online safety. Campaigners and bereaved parents have welcomed the news. Our technology editor Zoe Kleinman reports.
Ellen Room's son Jules was 14 when he died in 2022. She believes that he was trying an online challenge which went wrong, but she's never been able to access his data to prove it. Under current rules, a child's data must be requested from tech companies within 12 months of their death by either a coroner or the police. But bereaved parents say often by the time that happens, this record of what their child has been doing online has already been deleted. Under new rules, coroners will have to tell Ofcom as soon as possible about the death of every child aged 5 to 17, so that the regulator can order tech companies to preserve their data if it might be relevant to how they died.
I always said that if I could try and make something positive out of the loss of Jules's life, then I would, and this going forward will help other bereaved families. What we now need to do is stop the harm happening in the first place. This is really relevant when a child dies, but we need to stop children dying in the first place.
The government's already announced that it's launching a public consultation in March. It's seeking opinions about options like banning social media for under 16s, restricting their access to AI chatbots, and limiting infinite scrolling for children, otherwise known as doom scrolling. It says it will act quickly on the results, but critics are concerned this might mean the government giving itself powers to change laws without due process.
A newly enforced rule banning the creation of AI deepfakes was rushed into action 10 days ago following condemnation of Elon Musk's chatbot Grok for creating and sharing explicit images of real women on the social network X. AI chatbots like ChatGPT didn't exist when the Online Safety Act was being written. The government says it intends to close loopholes so that the tech is now included. Today's announcement is a clear sign from the government that children's online safety continues to be a top priority. And while it may be based on wheels that were already in motion, it's been welcomed by campaigners and bereaved parents, some of whom have spent years tirelessly fighting for change. Zoe Kleinman, BBC News.
Well, the Australian government's social media ban for under 16s has been in place since December last year. Let's speak to Professor of Communications at Edith Cowan University in Perth, Leila Green, to get more on this. Hi, Professor. Good to have you with us. So how effective is this ban on social media for under 16s proving so far?
So far, the anecdotal evidence is that most teenagers have found workarounds. It is mainly anecdotal at this point. So the social media platforms are telling us how many hundreds of thousands of accounts have been closed. But the young people that I've spoken to, aged between 13 and 16, haven't noticed a difference. They had already prepared to move on to other platforms that weren't regulated. But those that, but they found that that's unnecessary because they managed to evade most of the age verification software so far.
Yeah, because the onus is on the tech companies, isn't it, to take reasonable steps to keep kids off their platforms. But clearly, would you suggest that that's not working because they're not being strict enough?
I think that there's a lot of people trying to do a lot of things very quickly, but certainly there's no sign that the tech companies are particularly motivated to go out of their way in this respect. It's good that it's a tech company responsibility. We want parents and children to continue to be able to talk to each other because actually a lot of the things that are regulated have less to do with outside influences and more to do with social circles that young people move in, which is why the social media has its strengths, not because it's a technical thing, but because it means you can't get away from your local social circle. Or something that's horrible about you could be posted to a whole social circle immediately and you don't know how to respond to that because everyone you've ever spoken to suddenly gets told either erroneous or information that you never intended to be made public. So I mean, some of those things are really difficult. Yeah.
Now, I was going to ask what, given the experience, and just it's just, you know, 6 weeks or so experience, it's not very long, is it? But the lessons that Australia is learning as the UK and other countries look to move forward with their policies on social media, and there's going to be a consultation coming into effect next month, and the government wants to move quickly off the back of that. What do you think other countries can learn about perhaps how to be more effective?
Well, it seems to me that it would be better if the countries got together and sorted out how they want the social media companies to regulate themselves better. Not so much locking people out of the platforms, but to make the platforms safer for young people to be on them. And we don't want to close down those channels of communication because the parents are children's best response or best place of safety if something goes wrong. And they need to be able to keep talking to their parents about things that happen to them online and not risk being having things done because they shouldn't have been online in the first place. So, you know, otherwise people tend to react to you shouldn't have been online rather than how can I support you through this? What do you think we should be doing about this particular challenge? What's your ideas?
Yeah, what do you think
so
safer?
What we're doing is closing down conversations.
What do you think safer looks like, given that, you know, kids are taught about the dangers of posting inappropriate things on social media and that that stays with them forever?
Yes, they're taught about that. But young people are realising that actually a lot of people, well, as we now know with the AI, what's real and what's pretend, what's fabricated and what's real is very difficult to know. And very difficult to defend yourself against, very difficult to be authentic about. So we are in a new area here. The sorts of things, but taking people, young people, off these platforms is just going to delay things and possibly make things worse because then they don't have channels of safety to talk to adults and trusted others about things that are going wrong. And that is still a child's best response, is to get support from people and be able to talk through the options and develop their own critical reasoning and response skills.
Professor
with
Edith,
support from those who care for them.
Professor Edith Cowan, thanks very much for joining us and for telling us more about what's happening in Australia. Well, let's speak to our political correspondent, Joe Pike, now, who is in Westminster. Hi, Joe. So tell us more about what's on the table for the government when it comes to their social media strategy.
Well, Samantha, the government have been accused by opposition parties of moving sluggishly. Of course, the challenge for politicians across the world is the technology, especially AI technology, is moving far faster than legislative bodies are. So what the government are now doing is announcing a consultation that will start next month on a social media ban and other sort of related issues. And then before the summer, so maybe June or July, they will set out their plans. They also want to close a couple of loopholes, one on AI chatbots, where young people can have, in some cases, some pretty concerning conversations with these chatbots.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program, brought to you by Louis Sashimi. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye.